I want to continue our study in Islam, and let me just do a few things, make a few statements to get you on the same page with us, those that have not been able to join with us as of yet. We have been talking about one of the subjects that I believe is the most important subject that I have dealt with in a long, long time. And the title of the series, it's available here at Word of Life. You can get it. It's entitled Ishmael's Islamic Invasion. I spent some time in looking at Satan's subtle strategy at setting in place a dominion over this world, a one-world kingdom. We're going to develop that a bit more this morning. But indeed, it was Satan who took the idea from God, because in Genesis chapter 1 and verse 28, it was God who told Adam that he now had dominion over all of creation. Satan, realizing that, had to institute a subtle strategy. That subtle strategy took place in the establishment of sin by Satan tempting and being used through and using confusion of what God had said to Adam and Eve to bring sin into the world, chapter 3 of the book of Genesis. And thus, he then gained control over humankind and thus over all of God's creation through one man, through Adam, who had been placed in that position by God himself. Nothing new under the sun. Satan does not have any new ideas. He simply is playing on the other ideas. Satan coming into existence, a good angel in the first 6 days of creation, but then realizing he could exercise his own free will 5 times in the book of Isaiah chapter 14, said he would rise above the stars, he would put his throne in the heavenlies, he would be like God, he would be worshipped at Jerusalem. And then through the years, he started to use personalities in the Word, and we looked at Ishmael just briefly as we traced his true legacy. Ishmael was not the father of the Arab world. In fact, if you think about it, his mother Hagar was an Egyptian. Very difficult for Ishmael to father the Egyptians if his mother was one. And we looked at those in Genesis chapter 10 who came into existence, Cush, Ethiopia, Somalia, Sudan, Put, Libya, Nimrod, who goes to Shinar in the plains between the two rivers, the Tigris and Euphrates, modern-day Iraq, and establishes his kingdom. And we saw how these different Arab countries in the world today, most of them in place 500 years before Abraham came on the scene and 500 and some years before Ishmael ever came on the scene as well. And so we saw that taking place. Yesterday we looked at what I would refer to as the components of Islam, and I referred to them as a satanic trio, talking about the diviner, which would be the one who is the spokesperson for this satanic religiosity, Islam. And I am not going to go into all the details that I said, but I reported that to Muhammad, who had been involved in signs, wonders, and miracles through the times, was involved in that particular area of demonology. And then we looked at the deity, Allah, who is not the God of this book. He denies the humanity of Jesus Christ and that he is the Son of God himself. And then we looked at the doctrine and some in the Quran and how it has the doctrine of abrogation, abrogating all that is truth in God's New Testament, God's Old Testament, and telling us what we need to know about what God has done, is doing, and will do in the future. Now today I want to come to the Islamic invasion in our world. Satan brings into existence, I believe, a satanic religiosity. And I think that we have to be, let me just make a statement here. I prefaced my entire study the other day by saying I'm not attacking personalities of the Islamic faith. I am attacking the philosophy of the Islamic faith itself. And I think that we have to, in this time in which we're living, move forward to do exactly that. By the way, I mentioned that there was an excellent book that was available. I'm not sure if it's in the bookstore here. We'll have to find out. But Unveiling Islam, two brothers who were born into the Islamic world. Their father was a Muslim. They grew up as Muslims. Then they came to know Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior. Now they are professors, one in Hickory, North Carolina, one in Dallas, Texas, in two of the most conservative Baptist schools you're ever going to come across. In fact, Chuck Scheide, who is the head of the Bible Institute here, knowing one of them very well, and I believe one of them just spoke someplace locally this last weekend. And I'm talking about Ergon Kanner and Emir Kanner in the book entitled Unveiling Islam, an excellent treatment, an apologetic in helping us to understand the Islamic faith and what it is. Here are two men that come out of it. Here's two men that, as their mother tongue, it is Arabic, which is, if you're going to read the Quran, they say that it's blasphemy to ever translate the Quran because Arabic is the holy language, and the Quran written in perfect Arabic, which is not a true statement, that you're not allowed to even spend any time in an English translation of it. And they really have put out death warrants for those who have done English translations of the Quran. But anyway, that would be an excellent resource material. And then Brother Steve here found a website last evening that I'm going to be looking at and talking to you, maybe give you some more information about it tomorrow. And so this will help you to get a grasp or a handle on some of that which is going on in our world. But I want to speak today about the Islamic invasion. And first of all, what I want to think about is the promise of the Messiah. We'll look at the problems for Muhammad and the preparations by the Muslims, but first the promise of Messiah. Go with me to the book of Daniel, if you will. Daniel chapter 2. You might remember Daniel now comes from the royal family in Jerusalem, taken by Nebuchadnezzar when he was the crown prince. He was the crown prince, heir apparent to take over the Babylonian Empire. He had just defeated the Assyrians in the north. He had driven the Egyptians who had come to join in the battle with the Assyrians against the Babylonians. He had driven them down the land bridge back into what we know as modern-day Egypt. He was making his way through the land bridge, which is modern-day Israel. It touches three continents, Africa, Asia, and Europe. And, so, and by the way, that's why it's such a strategic location in all of the world. Ezekiel 5:5, God says, I put Jerusalem in the center of the earth and all the nations around her. And so he's making his way through the land bridge. He comes through Jerusalem. He sees this magnificent temple that Solomon had spent 7.5 years building. He sees them worshiping a God that he does not recognize. So he takes Daniel, the three Hebrew children, into the captivity or into Babylon. He's going to train them up. So then later on, they will be able to help him as he goes and gets all the Jews and brings them into the Babylonian captivity as well. And he'll have four young men that will be set in place and be able to help him accomplish his goal. He trains them in chapter 1. In chapter 2, they become the qualified wise men and are a part of a special group that advises now King Nebuchadnezzar, his father having died. Now King Nebuchadnezzar, and Nebuchadnezzar has a dream, and Nebuchadnezzar wants an interpretation of the dream. He had referred to the wise men his dreams of the past, and they would give an interpretation of some kind. He didn't really see that resulting in the absolute truth or the ultimate unveiling of that dream coming to be. And so he now has a better idea. He said, instead of just getting the interpretation, I want the dream itself. And so he calls some of his wise men in. By the way, Daniel and three Hebrew children were not there. And so these wise men came in and he said, fellas, I want the interpretation of the dream. Yes, Nebuchadnezzar, give us the dream. We'll give you the interpretation. He says, no, not this time. I want the dream and then the interpretation. If you can give me the interpretation, you can give me the dream as well. Oh, no, Nebuchadnezzar, we don't do that type of thing. That's never happened before. It's going to happen this time or I'm going to cut your heads off. You understand? That's real plain, isn't it? And so give me the interpretation after you give me the dream. Well, they can't do it. He gives them a little bit of time. Meanwhile, Daniel, Ananias, Azariah, and Mishael, the three Hebrew boys, decide, well, we better get together because we're part of this constituency of wise men. We better come up with an answer for Nebuchadnezzar. Well, God, it tells us in the second chapter of Daniel, God gives Daniel the capability of seeing the dream and interpreting the dream. That's his chapter 2. And you know the dream. He saw a man with a gold head. He had a chest and arms of silver, belly and thighs of brass, legs of iron, 10 toes of iron and clay. A stone comes along and hits this image of the man, bursts it up into little pieces. The wind comes along, blows the pieces away, and then that stone becomes a mountain. You see, that's exactly what Daniel tells here, starting in verse 31 of Daniel chapter 2. He tells him the dream. Now Nebuchadnezzar is blown away. He said, "What? That is the dream. Now maybe this guy's authentic. These other guys have been using subterfuge to lead me down a merry little rosy path, but now maybe I've found an authentic diviner of dreams that can tell me what's going on."